goodness. Welcome to First Things First. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
What up, Mannix?
What's going on?
Good to see you. Jenna Wolf.
Oh.
Good to see you. Kevin Wilds completing your first official week.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
Last week was like a little trial.
Yeah, it's like how they start kindergarten. They can't give you a full week.
So this is your first full week?
Take a nap.
What say you? Anything? Any words of wonderful wisdom after one whole week under your belt?
Oh, sure. When you look at what the Warriors are doing, I actually wonder, are they trying to win the game or are they trying
to get
the lottery?
We're going to get that, we're going to get some other
things. Maybe it's because we're not seeing Wiseman. And if we saw Wiseman play, they would say, like, hey.
Do you like what I've been wearing? Like,
oh, yes. It's also a pleasure. Thing.
Hey, we got a great show for you today. Really, really great show. Drew Brees doesn't think money motivates Tom Brady. He doesn't make money moves. The Clippers expose
I like that.
Small.
I love that.
Oh,
I love that.
Hey, we're working
on it. I loved that. That was great.
We got to start with tonight's star showdown. Nick did not like it, though. He didn't.
He was just shocked.
It is, if nothing else. it is a little must-watch basketball tonight. Bucks versus Lakers. Giannis versus LeBron. NBA Finals preview, perhaps. A great night from Giannis should lock up a second straight MVP, but LeBron isn't worried about regular season awards. Take a listen to this.
It's never motivated me. Regular season MVP has never motivated me. To be the best to ever play the game has motivated me and has resulted in me being able to be league MVP a couple times. But I've never gone into the season saying, okay, league MVP is what I want to be. I've gone into the season saying, okay, I want to be the MVP of this team. I want to be the best player in the world. And how I approach my game every day, how I take care of my body every day has resulted in things like that.
Nick, you obviously agree with what LeBron said, right? You agree by that?
No, I listened to this carefully, and I can't say LeBron was very careful with his words there. So I can't say he's lying because he said MVP has never motivated me. And that might be true, that it's never been his motivation, but he's absolutely cared about it. It has absolutely more than rankled him that he only has four when he clearly should have six, and you could argue seven. The one everyone agrees is the Derrick Rose one in 2011. That looks ridiculous in hindsight. And I think the first Steph Curry MVP bothers him greatly and bothered him greatly at the time. And you got to see it the following year when Steph obviously was the MVP when they won 73 games. That little block and shoulder shrug he did in game six of the finals after he had stuffed Steph in the exact same place on the court for the second time, kind of reminding him, I'm still the best player alive. No one ever should have doubted that I'm the best player alive. This was the most kind of aggressive trash talking I've remembered seeing from LeBron on the court during a game. So I don't think Mannix that he, I believe him, he doesn't go into a season, my number one goal is to win league MVP. But at the end of most seasons, I think he thinks, I was the damn league MVP, and gets bothered by the fact that he doesn't have more of those. I think he feels like he should have a finals MVP that he doesn't from 2015. And I know he feels like he should have a defensive player of the year that he doesn't in 2013. So those things, he does care about those things. Maybe it's not his prime motivation.
Yeah, I think he's motivated by it. And look, he went into this season effectively motivated by Twitter trolls and pundits. Like he was out there using.
You were one of the pundits.
Not that much.
King. You came up with
I
it.
I trademarked it. I don't know why he's still using it. Yeah. But he used the Washed King line. There was that video that I saw on social media early in the season where he was going at a referee saying, look, I know you've been reading about me not playing defense season long, but this is a different year. So he's clearly motivated by slights. So winning the MVP has to have been on his mind all season long. Now, I don't think he has any chance of winning the MVP. I think, you know, not voting for Giannis is almost malpractice at this point.
But you got 20 games left. You got a quarter of the season left.
Okay. You're watching what Giannis is doing, right?
Yeah.
On the team he's doing it on, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. But you wouldn't call a game over after the third quarter. Can't call an MVP race over after three quarters
of the
season.
There's nothing LeBron can do tonight or moving forward that could change your opinion?
No.
Even if Giannis falls off and LeBron takes off?
There's got to be something.
If Giannis falls off a cliff and has the worst 20-game stretch of his career and the Bucks lose like 18 of them.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, but he's the guy.
What if for you, Nick, if LeBron started playing like Tatum-esque?
Oh, Christ.
Like a superstar.
Yeah.
Like Tatum-esque.
Oh, my God.
Do you think, and Giannis played the same he's been playing?
If Giannis maintains his level, LeBron has no shot.
No shot. Not even if he played Tatum.
If Giannis maintains where he's at, then he's got no. LeBron legitimately could average 35 points, 10 assists the rest of the way, and still
won't
not
matter.
Win. But the reason I won't call it over is just there's too much of the season left, and so with a quarter of the season left, there things could happen. Right. The analogy I used yesterday is if it's a basketball game, the Bucks are up. Giannis is up 13 going into the fourth. Sounds like you have him up 35 yeah. going into the fourth. So that one would be over with a quarter. I think, but if LeBron's going to have any chance at getting his fifth league MVP, tying Jordan, tying Russell, only behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, not only does he have to play great tonight, Giannis has to struggle tonight, and the Lakers have to win, and he has to follow it up on Sunday beating the Clippers, and then you can kind of shift the narrative.
Can I dig into the Giannis has to struggle?
Yeah.
Are you saying that Giannis should have a bad game, or what if the Lakers stopped Giannis? You know what I mean? Not that Giannis is just missing shots versus the Lakers are doing a great job stopping Giannis.
Yeah, well, because Giannis doesn't take a lot of shots, I think if he has a bad game, it means he got stopped. It means they found a way to stop him at the rim. It's not like James Harden, who I know we're going to talk about shortly, who some nights just can't make a shot. Mm. If Giannis doesn't have a great game, it almost always means it's because Bam Adebayo played out of his mind and slowed him down. It's because Anthony Davis would be stopping him at the rim tonight. That's the only way Giannis has a bad game. He doesn't self-inflict bad games because everything he does, nearly everything he does, is at the rim.
And look, this you can with or without the MVP, you can make the argument that this is one of LeBron's finest seasons yep. this year. When you factor everything in, the age, the injury at the end of last season, coming to back to a team that had eight new players on the roster and stitching it together in the way that he did. I was out in LA for about a week kind of writing a little bit about this and, you know, just digging into kind of LeBron's leadership with this group, how he kind of organizes trips on the road, how he helps this team bond and supercharge the chemistry with this group. All those things factor in to make this an incredible season overall for LeBron. Even if he doesn't win the MVP, he's just done some remarkable things this year.
Back here with Coach Mangini. Yes. Coach, we're talking Tom Brady.
He's back.
As he prepares for free agency, the looming question is, will Tom have to hand out resumes, or do they just know his stuff? Not that there's anything wrong with resumes. 6 Lombardi trophies, 4 Super Bowl MVPs, 1 mattress endorsement deal.
That's a good point.
That should not be slept on.
Wow, Jenna,
that's a good pun.
Got it?
It's great.
Better than the Cardi B.
Money. So what will motivate Brady's
Cardi B for this
free agency decision? We'll let Drew Brees tell you. Listen to him.
I can't speak for Tom, but I know for me, being at this stage in my career, I just want to win. I just want to win. I think Tom has been a guy who's kind of been the model for all of us for a lot of years. I don't think any of this is about money for Tom. I think it's about winning another championship. I also think it's probably about feeling like he's in a situation where he's got all the pieces in place to do that. So, again, I can't speak for him, but I know at this stage in the game and knowing his mentality to a degree, it's about winning a championship.
All right, Nick, if we are ranking what's important to Tom, you've got title, you've got money, maybe you've got family. Where do you rank them all?
Well, I think that Tom Brady, his whole career, has prioritized winning above all else. And he's won more than anyone else in large part, not just because of that, but partially because of that. But that doesn't mean money's not important, and that doesn't mean money just represents money. And for Drew Brees, of course, he's going to prioritize at this point winning over anything else. His winning cup is not even close to full. In fact, it is lower than he ever would have thought. One Super Bowl appearance compared to 6 wins, 9 appearances for Tom. So they're in very different places. But money represents, if you don't have it, it can represent a bit of freedom, it can represent stability.
Respect.
If you have it, though, it starts to represent other things like respect, which is, to me, what Tom Brady prioritizes in line at this point in his career with winning is being appreciated and being respected. Because in New England, he has got all the winning one could imagine. I don't know that he's gotten all the appreciation. And this past offseason, he got none of the respect. So if we're just about winning, then he's signed for the minimum. It's available to him. If it no, money matters nothing, if money only represents money and he's going to die with $100 million left over anyway, then play for the minimum, trust Belichick to bring in guys and go do it. But it represents more than that, and it should represent more than that. And so I don't think we can say, well, it's only about winning and nothing else, when it's also about, are you taking advantage of me? Are you taking advantage of the things I have afforded you? And do you appreciate that the step one of the Patriot way is me? And step two is make sure I'm there. And step three is all the stuff that Bill Belichick does.
Okay, so a few things here.
It's my favorite part of the show.
I think there's been another mattress commercial earlier in the career, so I think this might be mattress commercial number two.
Okay.
Probably competing brands.
Just beefs up the resume.
From Drew Brees' perspective, the Saints have got to be really happy to hear that he's prioritizing winning over money because he has made $10 million more than Tom Brady in his career to this point, yep, with 2 years less, and I've never known him to take a discount. So that's good that for New Orleans that he has now prioritized winning over money, and he'll be taking a less than top-end market deal. So that's good news on that front. In terms of money equaling respect and it being the first level of the Patriot way, that's not how it works. It's similar to when the Eagles won the Super Bowl and they were going to win them all and have so much fun and they were going to redefine the way that things are done. That's not how it works. It's hard. It's a difficult thing to do. If it wasn't, then everybody would do it. If what Tom has done was easy, everybody would do it. And it's taken an incredible amount of discipline. And now he's at the point in his career where he's trying to redefine how age relates to success. And unfortunately, he may not be able to be at the top end of the market when he's doing that, if he wants to do it with the best opportunity to continue to be successful, and that's in New England. So the idea that suddenly at this point, when he's made $250 million, his wife's probably made more, that now it's gonna be about the money, it doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. It's not what he knows, so I can't imagine it's changing now.
Doesn't he have enough money?
He has enough money.
Like, isn't that what we're talking about?
He has enough money and he has enough titles.
Doesn't he have enough? No, I think you can always.
No. He doesn't have enough titles?
He wants more titles.
Okay,
he wants more. Well, six to seven and $200 million to $230 million, I think, is a big difference. I think that he just wants to sit there, get another title, and be like, I'm the greatest of all time. I don't think the money matters at all.
Why last year when he was asking for a contract extension, when he said 2 years, $50 million, it gets it done, the same deal Brees got, did he not say 2 years, $5 million? If it matters nothing, then why not that?
I do agree with you on one note, Nick. I think you need to get a deal that is respectful enough.
Yes.
But you don't have to be over the top. And I think that In negotiations, and especially there, it's hardcore. So if they feel like they can negotiate and get you to play or coach or do whatever for $1 amount, then they're going to press you to do it at that dollar amount. And if the market says they can't, it doesn't mean that they're out. Look, Josh McDaniels was in Indianapolis, right? That's where he was going, mm-hmm, until he wasn't. And then he was back in New England. Tom Brady may be going somewhere until he's not, and he's back in New England, but that may take some time, and the market may have to show that he does have, you know, more value financially somewhere
else. And that's a risky game for the Patriots, because while he finds out what the rest of the market is, even if he's not just going to go to the highest bidder, he might go to the highest love. He might go to the highest appreciation.
Highest love, Nick?
Yeah, yeah. I think that Tom Curran said this, and I agree with him. It was about a few weeks ago. He said that he thinks that if Bill Belichick, in a meeting with Tom, said, Tom, I don't know how this thing got sideways. We love you. We need you. What you want $35 million, we'll give it to you. That Tom would respond and say, 25's fine. That he wants to hear it, and then he would say, I don't need all that, but I wanted to hear it. And when we talk, Coach and I have
I buy this.
Right?
You know what? This reminds me of the NFL 100 show.
Yes.
When Belichick was talking about Ed Reed. And Ed Reed was sitting here and Belichick was sitting there. And I had never heard Belichick, who's won all these Super Bowls with the Patriots, talk about a player
like he talked about, well, Randy, he talked about Randy on like the, I think it was the other show, but him talking about Ed Reed's like best play I've ever seen, smartest football player I've ever seen on the field.
He'll talk about Tom Brady later on when he's retired that way.
But can he break that out? Can we do another NFL 100 show? Have Brady there.
But he did it with Brady there.
And then what
didn't give him, he was, listen, he said great things about him, but it wasn't what you're talking about. It wasn't that effusive. And coaches, that's a little bit of Bill's ego, right?
No, look, when you've been together with someone for a long, long time, and then after 20 years, you're like, you know what? Change. You know what? I've been with you forever.
I love you. You're perfect. Yeah. Now change.
Now, look, after 20 years, change who you are. It's been great for us. We've had an incredible run. I've seen you treat other players a certain way. I've seen that the ruthless economy with which you run this team. But for me, be different.
Yeah.
Change.
If I'm the best ever, yeah.
Oh, okay. But it's,
you
it's,
better,
but,
or but, I might leave.
But it's a little, okay, and you might. And sometimes that happens, and you split up the house, and the kids are off of college and all that stuff.
And everyone's worse off.
And nobody's any happier, yeah. And things don't work out very well.
All right. On to our top story now. Rockets hosting the Clippers last night. Small ball. On a big stage, and the big stage won. Houston's starting lineup finished just 2 of 23 from deep. Mm-hmm. Clippers get the easy win. Nick, does this game say more about the Clippers and what they're doing, or the Rockets and what they seemingly haven't been able to do?
All right, credit to the Clippers, first of all. Longest winning streak in the league. They've won 6 in a row ever since Kawhi had that we got to get our bleep together moment in the press conference. They've been playing great. They've been healthy, and in the first half of that game defensively, that it's like, oh, there you go. That's the team defensively that we talked about that they could be before the year. But the Clippers didn't play great overall last night. This game was about one thing and one thing only. Three-point shooting and the Rockets being historically bad from three-point line, not just because of some excellent Clippers defense, because of some bad luck. Like when I say the Rockets added variance, what do I mean? I mean, what does added variance mean? Their upside got way higher, and their downside got way lower. Their best games will look better, and their worst games will look like this. That you look at the box score, and it's like, okay, rebounds, assists, fouls, turnovers, all almost dead even. Points in the paint, second chance points, fast break points, add them all up, even. So how did the Clippers dominate? Oh, the Rockets started 2 of 30 from 3. They missed 18 threes in a row.
Got to shoot out of it.
And so that's all it was.
Shoot out of it.
Clearly that was their focus.
The Clippers beat them by 18 points in the three-point margin, and they beat them by 15 points in the game. You can say with total certainty when the Rockets shoot like this, they can beat no one, much less beat a good team as good as the Clippers. So to me, it is as simple as the worst shooting night of the season for Houston playing a healthy, very good Clippers team. It's going to look as ugly as it did.
Now, you're right about the variance, because this is a team that can go to a conference finals or lose very quickly in the first round based on the kind of stuff we saw last night. And really, it's the last two games that have concerned me about the Rockets and how they've lost these games. You know, the Knicks went out there, and you may have missed it because they were fighting with Spike Lee, but
I was
Knicks
actually
went out
at
there.
The game, but go ahead.
Yeah, the Knicks, and they bullied them. They were big on the glass. They won the rebounding battle by, I think, 31. They had like 60-something points in the paint in that game. They were dominant on the inside, and then you have the Clippers come out, and yes, you're 100% right. The three-point shooting is the biggest takeaway from that game, but I'm looking at Zubac and Montrezl Harrell going for a combined 36 points in that game. Two big men on the floor making plays for the Clippers, and the Rockets simply don't have anyone, unless you're going to dust off Tyson Chandler at some point in the playoffs, to compete with those types of guys. So, you know, they're going to have to shoot like 40% from three most nights to be able to overcome that size differential.
So when I was in Bristol, I was the creative guy. And I would get invited to meetings that I didn't necessarily have to go to. Like, bring the creative guy. Let's see what he thinks. I'm like, yeah, I'll go to that meeting. And one day someone came up to me and said, Kevin, do you want to go to a meeting about Google Glass? I said, oh, yeah, of course. Google Glass? Yeah, I want to go to the meeting. And I had watched all the videos online, and it was like, this is the future. These little things, and it's augmented reality. And I was so excited to be in this meeting. We're waiting in the room. Google Glass, I'll give you a spoiler, Google Glass is the Rockets. I'm waiting in the room, and the two guys from Google open the door and come in the room, and they're wearing these ridiculous glasses. And I'm like,
this is not going to work at all.
First impressions?
It's just not going to work. Yeah. Obviously, it's not going to work. People are not wearing these things. That's what last night's game felt like to me. It's like, oh, throw it to the tall guy and that loses you the game? I'm not worried about the missed threes. They go in, they don't. But when you start throwing it to the tall guy and that's all it takes, I think the Rockets are done.
The only way I would push back on that is that
you
the
love
Rockets,
Google Glass.
Well, no, God no. The Rockets actually, the Rockets actually want you to throw it to the tall guy.
Yes.
Like they want to force you to take as many contested twos as you possibly can. Against the Lakers, they liked it when you dumped it in to Anthony Davis and played dump and chase. The problem is when you can't make three on the other end consistently enough, you run into some big time problems. So I think the Rockets want you to play that game through Zubac or through Harrell or. But it's not going to counter it.
Isn't the problem they just don't have a plan B? Like, their plan A, when it works, is fantastic. But they don't have a second way to win games.
Oh, Jenna, that's spot on. And they are betting on their first way. They are betting on their first way that over a two-week series, over a seven-game series, that this won't happen at all. And if it does, it'll only happen once. You bring up Zubac, and it's like, wow, he was 6 of 6. He had 12 rebounds, 23 points. Points in the paint last night. Rockets 52, Clippers 46. Believe it or not, the Rockets beat them on the inside. The reasoning, what happened was purely about three-point shooting. And your Google Glass analogy, I like it, but I also think that in 15 years, we're going to look back and say, oh, they didn't have, Google Glass didn't have it exactly right, but now everyone is watching stuff through
something.
Their eyes. Or, you know what I mean? Some version of that, some better version. So maybe the Rockets don't have it exactly right, but this is the way, for good or for bad, the way the league is going. But no one wins games shooting like this. In the NBA this year, 26 times, there have been teams that have shot less than 17% from three. Those teams are 4-22. And those four wins came over Detroit, Washington, Atlanta, and Charlotte. This year, teams 14 times have been 7-35 from three or worse. The Rockets were 7-42. They're 0-14 are those teams. Like, you can't win games in the modern NBA or in any NBA. You said they're going to have to shoot 40%. They had one last night shooting 33% from three. They just, it was, you know what it reminded you of? The Game 7 Western Conference Finals, the single worst loss of James Harden or Daryl Morey's careers, when you're at home against KD and the Warriors, no Chris Paul, and you miss 27 threes in a row, that is the downside of this. The downside of this style is they're never going to stop shooting, and they don't have a plan B, Jenna.
All right, so we started the segment asking, was this more about the Clippers or more about the Rockets? We've talked about the Rockets. Aren't you a little impressed with what the Clippers have done? Either of you, we have talked about this stretch that they're on, and we would determine a lot about this team, the way they come out on the other end. So far, they've lived up to it.
Well, look, I've always been bullish on the Clippers, and this season has not gone the way that Kawhi's first season or only season in Toronto went in terms of the seamlessness of the transition. They've had their ups and downs, the locker room stuff with some of the things that Harrell said. But when you put this team on paper, they can still do things like this every single night. They've got two elite wing players in Kawhi and Paul George. They've got a backcourt that works. I mean, I've always believed, Nick, and I know you're down on the Clippers compared to the Lakers, for sure. But you get this team into the playoffs and you give these guys two or three days in between games like they're going to get, they're going to be close. They're going to be as tough as anyone in the Western Conference.
So the Clippers were great. And you're right. I said this five-game stretch, which was Nuggets, Sixers, Thunder, Rockets, Lakers, that they're in the midst of. I said, we're going to see a lot about them. They're 4-0. Now, the Sixers game, a little, when I said that, we didn't know they were going to be without Embiid and Simmons. Yeah. But still, 4-0 is 4-0.
Sure.
So I have to give them credit. They're playing excellent basketball. But right now, to me, the Clippers are a stock that is at its apex. I think right today, the narrative will be no one can beat the Clippers. And the Rockets right now are a stock that is as low as it will get all year. Right now, people are going to say, are the Rockets, can you even win a first round series like this? I'll sell the Clippers stock and I'll buy the Rockets stock today. Anyone wants to do that trade?
I don't really understand that rash, based on what? Like, you've got outside of LeBron, the best playoff performer in the NBA over the last 5 years.
Leonard. That's an outrageous comment.
I said outside of LeBron. Like, who would you put on that list outside of
the last
Kawhi
5 years or the Here last 8 months?
You go back to San Antonio. He had some good runs.
MVP in 20. What year are we talking about? In 2014?
Was it 2014? Yeah.
Okay, so now we're 6 years ago. 2 years ago, he missed the season. The year before that, he was playing great until he got hurt in the playoffs. He was the best playoff performer for a month last year. That's it. So I will not concede you that. But what do I not like about the Clippers is very simple. There is a level of consistency that matters, and we say every year, health determines a lot. The team with the single biggest question mark at health up and down the roster is this team. So, yeah, are we going to guarantee full health for every team throughout the playoffs? Then it's a different story. And you can say, well, you can't factor in injuries. You kind of can with the Clippers when they have played all year long like they're terrified of the injuries. And I don't love Kawhi's shot selection. Everyone loves he's the mid-range god. They showed the stat yesterday. 56% of his two-point attempts are non-layups. Like, that to me, that math will work against him.
Time for drawing a blank. Here we go. Steph Curry finished with 23-7-7 last night in his return to the Warriors roster, but he only played 27 minutes. Nick Wright, Curry's minutes restriction last night was blank.
Absurd. It's ridiculous.
Thank you.
Come on, man. Come on. What's the point of these games? What is it?
To win.
Thank you. To win.
Edwards thing.
And why are people buying tickets? Either to watch you win or to watch the best players as much as possible. A minutes restriction for a hand? Now, if he was winded himself, he can go full game and he realized mid-fourth quarter I'm not in shape, I would not hold that against him at all because he hasn't played basketball. But to put a limit on it before the game with a hand injury, I've never seen something like it.
I think Steph Curry's restriction is kind of goofy too, but I think his return is useful to the NBA because the Warriors have some consequential games left against teams in both conferences. We know the seeding is tight on both ends. The playoff spots are in the mix there. I think having Steph Curry back gives Golden State a chance to be a spoiler and win some games and not just be the team you can run over on your way to the playoffs.
See what the view looks like from the other side.
I had the lottery-esque.
Oh, you think they're just
I don't know. There was 8 minutes left in the game. Kerr pulls him out like, you guys can beat the defending champions. We talk about the lottery with the Knicks, the Hawks, like, look for the future. This is the worst team in the league. We don't care about the future? Lottery-esque.
Okay. We'll get into this later because it's awful.
On to last night's Clippers-Rockets game.
Your take was fine.
Kawhi dropped a team-high 25 while Houston couldn't get anything to fall. So, Nick, the rest of the NBA should feel blank about the Clippers handling the Rockets.
A little nervous. Clippers A game at full strength looks very good. Do I think their A game beats the Lakers A game? No. Do I think their A game beats the Bucks A game? No. But the next best team on the list is the Rockets, and they beat the Rockets handily last night. Now the Rockets couldn't hit a shot to save their life, but yeah, the rest of the league is 30 teams, 27 of them should be nervous. I don't know about the Lakers and the Bucks, but the rest of the league a little nervous.
Nervous? Let's go with terrified.
Terrified. Up the ante.
Because you have to go a step too far. One of the best playoff performers of the last 5 years in Kawhi Leonard. You got Paul George getting some chemistry. And you have the big men with that group. Harrell, Zubac, off, having good games. This team is starting to come together. And if you're going to bet against Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs, go back and watch all of last year. Go back and watch the last postseason. This guy is a
great playoff performer.
How about the Eastern 40%. Conference games? How about the shot he made against Philadelphia?
No, those two rounds. For two rounds, Kawhi Leonard was the best player in the world. No one can take that away from him.
Okay.
Two rounds.
I had Mike and Esk.
George
Mikan's in heaven getting warmed up. He's like, all they do is make fun of me for the last 40 years, but old Mikan can get buckets now. If the center's 6'5", give it to Mikan. And his wife is like, Mikan, why do you have your uniform on in heaven?
His wife calls in Mikan? That's odd. She probably has the
in
same
heaven, you call everyone by their last name.
Oh, okay, got it.
Just throw the ball down to the big man, Mikan-esque.
Okay. On to LeBron now. The King said, quote, regular season MVP never motivated me to be the best to ever play. The game motivates me. So, Nick, LeBron not being motivated by regular season MVPs is blank.
Ahistorical. It's not accurate. It's just, I understand what LeBron's saying. He's more focused on the team awards. And maybe going into the year, it's not his motivation. But at the end of the year, he's been a tick or two angry at a lot of voting, some of which Mannix did. I'm responsible for none of it because the league won't give me a vote for some reason. But some of these votes that he should have at least six MVPs, arguably seven. He's got four. So the idea that this isn't something that matters to him is ahistoric.
Yeah, I think it's total BS. Wow. And he's not motivated by it. Of course he's motivated by it. He's motivated by Twitter pundits going after him and criticizing him on social media. He came up with the hashtag Washed King, when if you do a Google search, nobody ever actually called him washed. Like, there's nobody out there that did that. So good for LeBron at 35 years old to find extra motivation. This is one of those motivating factors.
Is that true about the Google search?
Yes, sure. Everybody wrote a whole story on it.
He like, did it with his Google glasses on, too.
Oh, good.
Go.
I was scared when Hubbard, our producer, asked, like, Wilds, what's your word? I was like, I kind of want to say this, but I think Nick is going to go crazy.
What is it?
Anti-Jordan-esque.
Why?
Explain. Just win them all. I think Jordan just wanted to win everything. Win it all. You don't have to be.
No, Jordan was definitely a more selfish player.
Yeah.
I agree. Why would I get mad? It's a great take. I agree with you. It's a great take.
Speaking LeBron and the Lakers, Lakers will reportedly sign Deion Waiters for the remainder of the season. So, Nick, Lakers fans should feel blank about acquiring Deion.
Anxious, but luckily I hear Deion's got something to help with that anxiety.
This guy!
So anxious. Welcome to
the Chuckle Hut, Nick Ryan.
The Chuckle Hut. You're doing George Mike and in heaven bits, and I can't make one weed joke. I say anxious.
I would say indifference. Look, the Lakers, their backcourt rotation is set. Alex Caruso has been excellent for that team. Danny Green has been excellent. I mean, if you're playing Deion Waiters, it's because something went terribly wrong. He is quite literally the break glass in case of emergency guy that you stick in there because of injuries or foul trouble. You should feel indifferent about adding him.
Break glass in case of emergency and the day is saved. Irrationally confident. Something went wrong. Who do we have? Holy cow, a crazy great shooter who no moment is too big for him? Love it. Irrationally confident.
Deion Waiters and Reggie Jackson, I got to be texting each other like, can you believe it? Can you believe that we both ended up on winning?
I'm just glad the Lakers got somebody. I mean, they were whiffing left and right on some of them.
I think they were just happy with their roster.
They were waiting
they
for Deion Waiters.
They wanted Darren Collison. They wanted Marcus Morris.
Well, Darren Collison decided to stay dedicated to the Lord. You can't hold that against him.
On to the Knicks
now. They got the better Morris brother anyway.
In the middle of their own turmoil, they're reportedly considering a move to acquire Chris Paul this summer. So, Nick, the
Love
CP3
it.
To the Knicks rumors are blank.
Can I say this on the front end? I love Chris Paul.
Oh, no. This is a bad
sign. One of the greatest. I don't care about the playoff resume. One of the greatest players of his era. Top 50 all-time NBA player. But the rumors are just perfect. Because, of course, the Knicks want a guy. Is he 35 or older? Is he on an absurd contract? Sounds just like our type. Like, this is exactly the type of player we've acquired for 25 years. Jerome James not available. Amari Stoudemire, I think, is in Israel. Give us Chris Paul. It's perfect. Of course it's perfect.
I go the other way. I think it's exciting they would go after Chris Paul. I mean, the Knicks are probably the only team in the league where right now it makes sense. Now, if you had said at the beginning of the season they're going to go get Chris Paul, I would laugh at it as well. But this year, Chris Paul
he's
been a high-level guy. You've got 3 years left in that contract at big money. Let's assume you can get two high-level years out of Chris Paul, which I think is realistic for a player that plays his style. Why not do it if you're the Knicks? You're not a free agent. Destination. Nobody is going there. You're not signing Giannis in 2021. You're not even in the mix for Giannis.
The Celtics probably trade for him.
The Celtics could pick him up. They want Marcus Smart. The point is, you can get Chris Paul, and he can slowly start to change the culture there.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
By giving them their first real
don't
point guard since Mark Jackson.
What's your word? Look, Chris Paul's a Leon Rose guy. Mm-hmm. There's another great Leon Rose guy out there. Veteran will do the exact same thing, and he deserves his farewell tour, Carmelo-ish.
Oh, Carmelo-ish.
Yes.
So you think
Chris Paul and Carmelo next year.
You were excited, I assume, about the Tracy McGrady and Steve Francis Knicks signings as well.
Yeah, I like the jerseys.
Yeah.
I like getting legends in New York. Do you like Melo?
Not back in New York, I don't know.
Why? Come on, give
Have
him
you seen
give
his
him
usage
tour.
Rate and his efficiency numbers?
Oh, like, God, enough with the efficiency rate.
Back here with 10-year NBA vet Ryan Hollins. We're talking Steph Curry. After missing 58 games, the baby-faced assassin returned to the Warriors lineup.
How long
lineup.
Is he going to have that nickname for?
Like,
will that be his nickname when he's 60?
He's out of diapers at least. Yeah. Dropped 23 points, 7 boards, 7 assists in 27 minutes of play. Nick, what'd you make of Steph's return?
He's awesome, man. I think he took a few too many really deep threes. And
are you serious?
No, I mean, I think he was 0 for 5 on threes from more than 30 points. I think his first game back, he was kind of, you know, sowing his wild oats to a degree, but it was great to see him. I mean, if they really cared about winning, they obviously would have played him longer, and he maybe would have been a little more diligent with his shot selection. But the NBA missed him, man. He is one of one as far as the feeling you get when you watch him. And even though Trey is trying to be a version of Steph, Trey's game's actually very different than Steph. And Trey is not Steph Curry. He can try to mimic as much of him as he can, but Steph is, we've never had a guy like him. And people wonder, what's going on with the NBA's ratings? Well, Kevin Durant hasn't played this year. Steph really hadn't played this year. There, you know, LeBron's games start at 10:30 on the East Coast. That doesn't help. There's been a lot of things, but a lot of it's just this guy. We had a great team that people either loved or they loved to hate, and they basically contracted. They basically were relegated like you have in European soccer. So I was thrilled to see him back. I wish he would have come back earlier. I was talking to a friend who covers the Warriors in the Bay Area yesterday. The feeling out there is that he probably could have been back earlier, but they're not so focused on winning.
So what does that mean, not so focused? That's what I'm confused by. Do they want to win games or not?
No, they don't want to win games because you want to get a high pick. You know, it's almost works against you if you end up being, the 10th, 11th seed? You'd rather be the last pick and have better odds.
How far are we going to take this then?
I don't know. That's what I wonder.
So should the Grizzlies throw games? Does anybody think the Grizzlies are going to beat the Lakers? Anybody? Do you think they got any shot? What about the Kings, who are fighting for that 8th spot to catch the Grizzlies? Should they? If it's championship or nothing, then how many teams should tank? How many teams should say, you know what, let's try to lose? How far do we want to take it? I'm just curious.
I know, that's what
I think there's a different thing. So if we say, we're going to say in terms of the Grizzlies, they've got to build a winning culture.
Okay.
If you're going to look at Golden State.
I like this.
They have a winning culture within their core pieces.
So if you have a winning culture, you can lose. But if you have a losing culture, you need to win.
Well, you look at injuries. You look at free agency, losing out on guys like Kevin Durant would have changed the situation in Golden State. Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, those guys know what it takes to win a championship. Now, they're going to have to inculcate those championship elements into these young guys. But in the process, if Steph Curry doesn't play on back-to-backs, you ease him back into the lineup.
Back-to-backs because of a hand injury?
Listen.
A hand injury.
If there may be a scenario where he still has to get in basketball shape and basketball rhythm.
How do you do that? How do you do that? Playing basketball games?
But you have to ease into it. Listen, he's stepping in at a point in the NBA season where you're almost three-fourths of the way through the season, Nick. So essentially, everybody's playing out of 10 of a 10 right now. 9 of 10, 10 of 10. And he's coming in at the beginning. It's going to take a second for him to adjust.
The tiers of playing, it's like, all right, no one ever plays for just 5 minutes. Like, they're like, Kerr was like, we're going to play him 25 minutes. Are there different tiers where, like, wow, he played the whole game, or you sat out the whole game? Is there medium tiers where, like, oh, I just want to play a little bit. I want to play a lot. How does that work?
Man, it's going to take about maybe 2.5 weeks before he really, really gets back in game shape. For one, all he's been doing is what? Drills, going side to side and shooting, stretching, playing in practice. Oh. That versus playing against the Raptors last night, completely different basketball game.
Hold on a second.
Completely different.
They're 14 and 49. Does anyone think if they were 49 and 14, he's on the same minutes restriction? Does anyone think?
Or that he would have been out this long.
Exactly right. That he wouldn't have been back earlier.
He would have been back earlier, But your original game, if not first five original games, there's going to be a level, level of restriction.
But that could have happened weeks ago. And you say talk about building a winning culture. This is their team moving forward, minus Clay. Clay has been an indestructible player, but coming off his first major injury, you have to open up the possibility that Clay is not going to be 100% next year. Clay's going to suffer a setback next season. Don't you want to teach Andrew Wiggins how to win? Is that not important? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've lost the plot on sports. I swear to God. Why does the NBA exist? Because people enjoy watching it. Why does Steph make $40 million and the world's greatest Frisbee golf guy makes nothing? Not because there is some moral imperative that basketball players are better than Frisbee golfers. It's because the market has decided we like watching these guys. And now we're saying for the fans of the NBA, for the season ticket holders, all that matters is making sure we have a 14% chance at James Wiseman instead of a 12.5% chance. Get out of here.
Also, the Pelicans had a 6% chance of getting the top pick last year. 6%. Hmm. So this whole idea of tanking is so up in the air. There's no assurance. You have no idea what's going to happen.
No, there isn't. But you also give these young guys more opportunity when Steph isn't on the floor. So let me ask this. Are you speaking to him if his minutes are moderated in general this entire time back? Are you talking specific to last night? You have a big problem with him playing or not with his minutes restriction.
I don't have a huge problem with your first game back after months off of not playing the full 35 minutes. I know it's a 48-minute game, but nobody plays full 48. I think he would have liked to come back earlier. I think he would have liked to play longer, and I think he could have. You watched that game. Did it look like Steph? Oh, my God. He's gassed. Can't do it. But what they are clearly doing is trying to say, let's take this year as a mulligan in order to try to revamp as much as possible for next season. And I'm just curious how far we are comfortable with taking that. How far are we okay with the moment Kyrie got hurt? Should the Nets, who are right now the 7th seed, have said, you know what? We a whole G League team up. We don't want to win because we want to go from in the playoffs to a 3% chance at the number one pick. Hell, the Pelicans, 6% chance. They got it. It is dangerous for the sport to have this. If for any sport, one of the great things about the NFL is you can't tank. Oh, the Dolphins, their worst team ever. They win 5 games because the game is too dangerous to not give it your best effort and put your best players out there.
I would say on an individual basis, this makes sense for Golden State. Because of Steph, because of Klay, because of Draymond, this would not make sense for another team who has to build culture, who does not know what it looks like. That's where I don't have a big problem with it.
I'll meet you in the middle. What if Golden State just played crazy? Like Steph took like a G League approach, just bombing threes. It's like, we might lose, but it's going to be super entertaining.
At least then you are doing something right by your fans. But this idea that it makes sense for them, I'll use a quick analogy. Right now, the back alley between that I live on, they want to repave it. And it's will the homeowners pay for it? And there's a little sign, we're this far away. And the odds are, I could not pay for it, and it's still going to get done. So it's like, well, it'd be best for me. I get the best of both worlds. But if everyone takes that approach, then it doesn't get done, right? If everyone's like, well, why would I pay when it's going to get done anyway? It's smart for Golden State to do it. Maybe it's smart at this point for the Cavaliers to do it. All of a sudden, if everyone says, I'm not worried about the greater health of the league, I'm only worried about me, then you don't have a healthy league. And at some point, there is a responsibility of a team more so than the Cavs, who have been terrible forever, except for when LeBron's there, the Hawks, who have been trying to figure things out forever. A team that matters, a team that's on national TV, a team that has arguably the most popular player in the league, to say it's not about a 1.5% better chance to get James Wiseman. It's about respecting the game. And I fans have been tricked on this. Oh, what matters is lottery odds. No, it doesn't. That's not what matters here.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.